welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Program brought to you by globalresearch.ca and my editor and co-host, Michelle Chosudowski. Gaza, again, is the topic today, and we're doing an awful lot on Gaza because it is so vitally important to follow this story, to let people know exactly what's going on. Israel may have declared a formal ceasefire. Israel never ceases fire. They did that at 2 a.m. last Sunday morning. The shooting, the shelling still continues. Israel doesn't withdraw. It redeploys. So troops are still around. Palestinians are still being killed. Not too much about this in the U.S. media, the dominant media mostly everywhere. But my guest just came back from the region. She's Jennifer Lowenstein. She teaches at the University of Wisconsin. She's the associate director there of its Middle East Studies program. She's also a board member of the U.S. branch of the Israeli Coalition Against House Demolitions. Israel has an ongoing program of bulldozing Palestinian homes, sometimes with people inside because they barely have a chance to get out. We can talk about that a little bit on the program, too. Jennifer is also the founder of the Madison, Wisconsin, where the university is, the Madison Rafa Sister City Project. And she's a freelance journalist when she has time. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks.
Oh, it's wonderful having you on. And you're on this story all the time, and it absolutely is obsessing me. I've written about 7 or 8 articles on it since it began the end of December. And I've got another one that I'm working on, and I'll have that for the beginning of next week. And I'll continue to follow this as you are. But you just came back from the region, and you didn't get into Gaza. I don't think it's too easy to get in there.
No.
But from your perspective of what you saw and what and your contacts and so on, how do you assess things?
Well, there are a number of different ways of assessing it, depending on what audience you are targeting. One of the things that I find particularly striking is that when you're in the Middle East, as I just was, I spent 2 weeks in Beirut, you find that all of the television news stations and the radio programs and the newspapers are dominated by the news about what was coming out of Gaza. They show graphic film footage round the clock, 24 hours a day, footage that needs no propaganda to spin it because it speaks for itself. And this footage is coming on Al Jazeera, Al Manar, Al Arabiya, the Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation television station, just about every news program in the Middle East, as well as CNN International and the BBC, although to a much lesser extent. So the people in the region, we have to understand, are seeing these images and following this action daily, around the clock, and they're getting information and news that we are not getting here.
Jennifer, let me interrupt because that music means a commercial break. Let's take the break, and then you pick right up where you left off.
Okay, sure.
Indeed, we do not see what's going on. I've seen, you can see it online, I've seen some of it. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Jennifer Lowenstein. Jennifer, if I could just take a moment and just read a little bit from Haaretz article today.
Uh-huh.
They have two wonderful Israeli journalists. One is Amira Haas, and the other is Gideon Levy. And anybody can read this material. They can Google Haaretz, H-A-A-R-E-T-Z. It's in English. And you can get their full online material. which I think covers a good deal, maybe all of what's in the newspaper. But Gideon Levy has an article today, and he calls it, and I agree with him, Gaza war ended in utter failure for Israel. Indeed it did. And one short paragraph, let me read what he says toward the end of his article. Third paragraph from the bottom of today's article, anybody can find it online, he says, the conclusion is, this is a Jewish writer, by the way, living in Israel, the conclusion is that Israel is a violent and dangerous country, devoid of all restraints and blatantly ignoring the resolutions of the United Nations Security Council while not giving a hoot about international law. Then he says, the investigations are on their way. There are charges being filed in The Hague, criminal charges against Israeli war criminals. And Israel put out a notice, you probably saw it, Jennifer, that they're warning their top people to check before they travel abroad.
Yes.
And some of their people will be told, don't travel. But you pick it up where you left off. You were talking about the graphic pictures that you can see in the Middle East.
Well, and the point that I wanted to make is that en route home, I stopped in London. When I was flying there, I stopped in Paris. And both London and Paris, all of the television screens in the airport terminals were tuned to news, and the news happened to be the news out of Gaza. So there was some information coming to people in transit in these airports. So, but 8 hours later, when I flew, after flying from London to Chicago, I waited 6 hours to catch my connecting flight and searched in vain for a television screen in the airport that had news on it, and all I could find was basketball. And the point that I wanted to make is simply that when we experience another 9/11, God help us, which is certain to take place, if not on American soil, then against American targets or Israeli targets in other parts of the world, Americans are going to again sort of sleepily raise their heads and say, gee, why do they hate us so much? And I think it's a message to people here that they need to wake up. That if they can't get the news that is happening in the world on mainstream news channels, they have to start looking for it elsewhere, because it's going on every single day. And the more ignorant we are of what's happening overseas, the more surprised we're going to be when attacks against us take place. This is a very scary prospect to me, and I think to many people who are aware of just what a terrible image the United States and Israel have in world public opinion. And that image is not coming out, it's not coming out of a vacuum. It's being created from very real photographs, pictures, and actions that take place around the clock, and not only in the Gaza Strip, where what just happened falls under the definitions both of crimes against humanity and of war crimes.
Jennifer, indeed, and this is what obsesses me too, and Gaza is one small area, 140 square kilometers, very small, 1.5 million people crammed into it.
Well, it's the most densely populated area of land on the globe.
Yeah, indeed.
I don't think most people can imagine how crowded it is in some of the refugee camps in Gaza City, in places like Khan Yunis and Maghazi and Nusayrat refugee camps. And when we hear news commentators remarking that the Israelis dropped leaflets on neighborhoods telling them to evacuate because they were coming in with their tanks and their armored personnel carriers and their highly equipped and trained soldiers, telling them to leave. The question on the minds of many people is to leave where? Where do they go? Where do they go to find shelter? And then when they find shelter, which in many cases were the UN schools and throughout the Gaza Strip and the UN compound, These places are bombs. They're targeted deliberately, and I use that word very carefully. They are deliberately targeted by the Israeli military to terrorize the population yet again, sending a message that there is no place safe in the Gaza Strip, and indeed that they can internally displace 80,000 people in the course of 2 weeks, if not more than 80,000 people, creating an enormous amount of chaos and destruction, but that they are creating an atmosphere, a psychological atmosphere of terror and fear and anger and outrage that is going to come back at us in, I fear, the very near future.
Oh, indeed. And even worse, Jennifer, is that this is strategic policy for Israel and the U.S. We both countries need enemies to justify that the imperial colonial aims they have. Israel gets very nervous. I've quoted Israeli officials going back in past years. They get very nervous during quiet periods. So Hamas has called different periods of ceasefire. They just finished one that lasted 5 or 6 months that they didn't break. Israel broke it. Israel
yes.
sent their agents into Gaza, and they murdered 6 people, and Hamas responded in self-defense to that. That was back on, November 4th, our election day,
mm-hmm.
when people here were distracted by the election.
There's a lot of things. There are many things that are timed like that. And anyone who is reading the foreign press, including the Israeli press, will have read that the attack on Gaza, the ground invasion of Gaza, was meticulously planned more than 6 months before the ceasefire was broken, and that the deliberate attack on civilians was also planned. It was planned as a tactic of, quote, going crazy, so that they could frighten the population into ceasing its support for Hamas. Well, of course, it didn't have that effect. It had the opposite effect. Hamas, if anything, is stronger now. But I wanted to go back to the point you originally made about when there is quiet, the need for Israel to create a pretext to allow them to go in and to create this kind of destruction. The same thing happened in the 1982 invasion of Lebanon, when the Palestinian side had been carefully observing a truce not to fire rockets over the border into Israel. And this, of course, was deeply upsetting to the IDF, because they wanted to find a reason, an excuse, to go into Lebanon and destroy the PLO as a way of maintaining or increasing their hold on the West Bank. Unfortunately, we find examples like this going back 40 and 60 years in Israeli history, in which the calculated response and the calculated policy of the Israeli military is to terrorize Palestinian civilians, to get them off the land, and to allow for a system of expansion into the occupied territories that nobody will challenge.
Well, that's absolutely true, Jennifer, and I've mentioned a couple of times on this program a doctrine came out around last fall. I don't know when it was written, but it was made publicly known, I think for the first time last fall, called the Dahiyan Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And that doctrine specifically states that everything is a target. Civilians are a target. It's all part of the military apparatus. So young children, women, the elderly are considered part of the military apparatus, the military assets, plus a strategy to attack an adversary at its weakest spots. So attack a hospital, burn it down. Attack a school, blow it up.
A sports center, a university, school. All of these things, and the doctrine that you're referring to, the Dahiya doctrine, is the word Dahiya comes from the neighborhood in South Beirut, Lebanon, that is the Hezbollah stronghold. And we'll remember that in 2006, the Israelis bombed that area of Beirut to such an extent that the reconstruction of that area is still going on heavily. You can walk around it and still see buildings that were targeted, bombed, burned, and construction going up all around that area. There's no question that civilians were deliberately targeted. And in fact, at the very beginning of this latest slaughter in Gaza, the chief of the IDF Southern Command, a general, major general named Yoav Gallant, made it very clear, and he stated explicitly that one of the chief aims of this operation was to cause the maximum number of enemy casualties possible. And by enemy, what he meant was Palestinian.
And he meant Palestinian civilians too, Jennifer.
Exactly.
That music again. Let's take another break and we'll come back. This again is a very important story to keep alive.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Jennifer Lowenstein. Jennifer, 2 points let me make, and then you continue.
Mm-hmm.
When Israel launched this attack, and this was an act of naked aggression against the civilian population.
Yes.
As far as Hamas goes, they're lightly armed. Israel has the mightiest and the biggest and the best. And, of course, there's such a powerful connection between Washington and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But this attack began last December 27th, Saturday morning, at around 11:25 a.m., timed when young children were taking their break from morning classes and heading home, and others were on their way to afternoon classes.
Mm-hmm.
It was deliberately planned to slaughter young children out in the streets. Second point, the first phone call, we got a new president here on Tuesday. Nothing will change. I describe him in one word, continuity.
Mm-hmm.
The first phone call he made to a foreign leader was to Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president,
mm-hmm.
the head of Fatah. Hamas is the legitimate government, the democratically elected one. Abbas is the president. Abbas is the president. And his term expired on January 9th, but he will not step down. And the entire world, nearly the entire world, still recognizes him as the legitimate president. Legally, he may be. We discussed this yesterday with Francis Boyle. But his term expired. Now, imagine if George Bush didn't step down last Tuesday. I think there would have been a little commotion about that.
Well, the point here also is that the Israelis and the Americans have a long record of picking and choosing the people they want to deal with and excluding and or killing through assassination or imprisoning people that they don't want to deal with. This is standard operating procedure as far as the Americans and the Israelis are concerned. And, you know, it's really no surprise that Abbas has maintained the legitimacy, quote-unquote, that Israel and the United States have given him because he's taking orders from them. And this goes back to your first point about the attack on Saturday, December 27th, at midday, one of the busiest times of the day on Saturday. I wanted to comment, just as an aside, that very few people remark that this attack took place on a Saturday, which is the Jewish Sabbath, and a day supposedly of rest. I don't know if anybody else was appalled by the hypocrisy of the Israelis taking that day to kill 230 people in a matter of minutes, including the majority of whom were civilian police. We forget that police officers and traffic cops, people sitting behind their desks for the purpose of maintaining civil order, are not legally combatants in a war. These were not militants trained by Hamas. These were police people, most of whom needed jobs and needed to take home something to give their families enough food to eat. I want to just tell you a small story about that day, because I have very good friends in the Gaza Strip. And on December 27th, the 10-year-old daughter of one of my friends was at her school when the bombing took place. And less than 30 meters away was one of the police headquarters that was targeted immediately, killing well over 80 people in about 2 minutes' time. This little girl basically saw the bombing from the vantage point of her school and saw body parts, human body parts, flying up into the air as the explosion around her rattled all the buildings and smoke and dust settled. She was unable after that to go to sleep at night without shaking and shivering for over an hour, even when her parents were next to her and reassuring her. This is one child, one 10-year-old child, who, as a matter of record, is a very strong little girl and a very bright child. I've met her many times. Imagine this 750,000 times over. Imagine what this kind of aggression and bombing campaign and ground assault is doing to the half of the population of Gaza who are children. What does this portend for the future, for the future generations of people who are going to grow up in a society where what they've seen around them from the Israelis is massive destruction, indiscriminate killing, and war crimes on a round-the-clock basis?
Jennifer, you and I are Jewish, and I grew up, I went to Hebrew school, I was bar mitzvahed. I remember what I was taught, what I should believe in. It was mirror opposite of the way Israel conducts its affairs. I guess it's not shocking because colonial powers, imperial powers throughout history, this is how they operate. And, of course, our own country here, going back to the roots of our country, I mean, we just went from east to west, from north to south, just slaughtering native people along the way. And this is what we did. This was building the country from coast to coast over the dead bodies of the people who lived there thousands of years before Western people ever showed up. Let's take another break, and we'll pick this right up.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. We're talking about Gaza. My guest is Jennifer Lowenstein. Jennifer, again, I remember and I internalized these lessons that I learned as a young boy growing up, and I can remember the things that I heard the rabbi in the synagogue that I didn't show up at very often, but a few times that I did, his sermons were much different than the terrible things that Israel does in their actions. And some Israeli Arabs, some Israeli rabbis are extremely belligerent. I just quoted a head Ashkenaz rabbi saying, everyone in the Gaza Strip should be dumped into the Sinai Desert and build a new home for them there. And he said, I'm going to discuss this with Prime Minister Olmert. And there was a rabbi, Jennifer, you probably remember this, I don't remember his name, another leading Israeli rabbi, who said something like, if any Jews die at the hands of Palestinians, and then Israel should retaliate, and taking Gaza as an example, just wipe them all out. Just slaughter them all.
Exterminate all the brutes, I think, was the direct quote, although I could
be mistaken
on that.
Oh, the Joseph Conrad term, yeah.
But, you know, it's really, when you talk about Judaism and Israel, I find this especially troubling because I believe that the state of Israel has done more to poison and destroy the Judaic faith than anything else could possibly have done, including decades or centuries of assimilation. I wanted to go back to the point I made earlier that the initial bombing campaign, which took place midday on December 27th, was on a Saturday, on the Sabbath. In other words, it was perfectly okay to murder and destroy the infrastructure of Gaza and terrorize thousands of people on the Sabbath. But a couple of weeks later, when UN officials, humanitarian aid officials, requested that the crossings into Gaza be opened on a Saturday, the response was that no, they were sorry, but this was the Sabbath, and the crossings would not be open on that day. In other words, it's not okay to help people on the brink of starvation, dying of severe amputation wounds and burns in hospitals that are understaffed and targeted during a war. It's okay to prevent humanitarian supplies from arriving and being received by these people because it's the Sabbath. But it's also okay to bomb them and destroy them on the Sabbath day. I don't know if other people were aware of the hypocrisy of this particular detail, but I think it's a microcosm of what Judaism, in my opinion, has become for the majority of Jews today. I know that living in the United States, that most of the American Jews I know who belong to established synagogues have completely lost any kind of moral compass. And this is, to me, nothing more than proof that Judaism as a faith has disappeared and has been overtaken by Israelism as an ideology, and one that is profoundly racist, based on a philosophy that we are better, that we deserve land and resources, and the right to expand and kill at will. But other people don't deserve that right, and they certainly don't deserve to smuggle in arms, which are, you know, the very least that they have to fight against the fourth most powerful military on the planet.
Well, indeed, Jennifer, self-defense is called terrorism, and naked aggression is called self-defense.
Well, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but, you know, I keep reading reports about how one of the conditions that the Israelis have laid out for their unilateral ceasefire to stay in place is that Egypt and other countries do more to block the smuggling tunnels. These smuggling tunnels were the lifeline for Gaza while this blockade and siege has been going on. Everything from food to clothing to cooking gas and fuel is coming through those tunnels. It is basically the last resort for the people of Gaza not to have a profound humanitarian crisis. And it's also true that weapons are coming through those tunnels, and that's what the Israelis are objecting to. Now, I happen to be a pacifist ideally, but I would like to know why weapons should be targeted as the object most objected to by the Israelis. What is it they are telling us, that the other side has to be completely disarmed, and that's when it's okay to bomb them, you know, with the most sophisticated military hardware in the world? Imagine this disproportionate scenario in reverse. Imagine Israel with no air force, no army, no navy, no bomb shelters or civil defense areas coming under attack by a world superpower. Imagine Palestinians flying F-16s over Tel Aviv in the middle of the day, bombing crowded areas. Imagine the outrage that people in the world would have expressed, at least in the Western world, at such abominable crimes. But when this happens in reverse, what we hear on television is this cowardly whining about glorified fireworks known as rockets that are launched across the border at Israel, the only symbol of resistance that basically still gets through. I'm not in favor of these rockets, but they're not coming out of a vacuum. They are the result of the blockade and the siege and the humanitarian catastrophe that we are imposing on the Gaza Strip. They're not the cause of this latest war any more than Hamas is the cause of it. If Hamas didn't exist, Israel's behavior would be identical, because it cannot allow any organization to exist in occupied territories that resist its control. So let's get rid of these ridiculous lies and distortions that are dominating our press, that somehow this is a war against Islamic terrorism and extremism. It has nothing to do with it.
I do a little bit of media critiquing along with the rest of what I write about, and it's pretty hideous stuff coming out of our media. I mean it's pure hate. Aside from the vicious lies and vicious one-sidedness, it is racist. It is vicious. It is very, very ugly. And this is the stuff people are reading. As far as arms go, Hamas has nothing compared to the might of Israel. And international law absolutely says self-defense is perfectly legal, perfectly legitimate, and nothing is said in the U.S. media about the massive weaponry that the U.S. supplies Israel with regularly. There's no smuggling to get that over.
That the fact that in UN General Assembly Resolution 42-159 from December 7th, 1987, the outbreak of the First Intifada, the General Assembly authorized people living under occupation the right to resist that occupation. Instead, we use the rockets as a pretext to cause some of the most unspeakable wounds and crimes that we've seen now in decades, although I have to say the war in Lebanon was fairly revealing of what was coming for the Gaza Strip. I just want to reiterate, though, that this would be happening whether or not Hamas existed. If Hamas were not the party or the organization leading the resistance against occupation, if Hamas were to disappear from the face of the earth tonight, another group would be formed, perhaps Islamic, perhaps not. In the past, we had more secular groups like the PFLP and the DFLP and Fatah, Arafat's Fatah, which is now a good guy. You know, these were the parties leading the resistance, and they were then the legitimate targets of Israel's wrath. So I think it's extremely important to tell the audience that this is not a war against Islamic radicalism. It's not a war against Hamas or against Iran. It is a war against a basically helpless, captive population with no means of self-defense whatsoever, because they don't want to be dominated by a foreign power. That's what this is about.
Oh, absolutely. The religious ideology is absolutely a non-starter. It has nothing to do with conflict. We support the most radical theocracy in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get any more radical than those crazies over there. But we get along just fine with them.
Not a word is ever uttered about the kind of state policies that the Saudis use against their own population, about public beheadings for smuggling a bottle of whiskey. You know, this is the regime that we are supporting with absolute, you know, abandon as the Israelis go after radical Islam, quote-unquote, in the Gaza Strip. Come on. How long are people going to sit back and believe these kinds of lies?
Well,
we also supported the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Oh, we did.
Long before it suddenly became our enemy. But this, of course, all gets lost in the historical record. It gets buried as quickly as the media and politicians can get it out of the public, if it ever even reaches the light of day, because it doesn't correlate to what our national self-interests are, and that's what's important. Not morality, not equality or spreading freedom. These are lies. And they deserve to be exposed on a daily basis in this country so that the average American can find out the truth and make up his or her own mind about what's happening in their name.
Well, without question, that's true. Thankfully, Jennifer, there are a good number of programs like this one where people can tune in and they can find out what's really going on. You generally have to go online or do a little bit of reading to get the right information.
You have to look around, but it's there.
Oh, it's there. It's
there.
There.
And, you know, it's one of the reasons I feel so angry at the elites in this country, at the educated population in this country, people who know how to get access to information, people who know what's happening on the ground outside of the borders of this country, and, I hate to say, within the borders of this country, for example, in the prison populations here, there's no excuse for the educated upper middle and middle class Americans in this country not to know what's happening in their name across the world. There's simply no excuse for it. It's ignorance, it's indifference, it's a kind of callous, racist, shameful behavior that has to be condemned.
I have personal experiences, I'm sure just like you do, about how intelligent people, including family members, who simply can't imagine that Israel isn't pure and we should support them, and how can, especially if you're Jewish, how can a Jew not support Israel? I like to use the phrase, poor Israel, poor Israel. Surrounded by hostile Arabs ready to pounce on them.
It flies in the face of all of the documentary evidence available to these very people who know how to get it, such as, for example, the fact, and I say the fact, that every significant leader of Hamas since 1988 has stated publicly that they would accept a Palestinian state on the pre-1967 borders. That is an implicit recognition of Israel's right to exist within secure and recognized boundaries. This information is consistently, repeatedly, and deliberately kept from the American public so that we can label Hamas as a terrorist organization bent on Israel's destruction. That lie, repeated over and over and over again, makes it next to impossible for Americans to comprehend the reality, which is that all of the leadership of Hamas has accepted the two-state solution. All of them.
I have quoted them verbatim. They are perfectly willing to accept 22% of their original homeland that they lived on for thousands of years. And,
mm-hmm.
and the Zionists came in the early part of the last century and they sold the idea to the British, who didn't need a lot of selling. They wanted a Western presence. In a part of the world where oil had been discovered early in the last century. and the Brits wanted to get the lion's share of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted a presence. Eastern European Jews wanted to settle in that part of the world. Gee, that was a terrific idea. So we had Balfour 1917. And that despicable resolution, declaration, where literally a homeland was promised to two people at the same time, and the Brits knowingly decided that they would do nothing for the Arabs, that they wanted the Jews there. And
well,
it was completely one-sided.
That was partly to do with winning domestic public opinion at home in Great Britain. I mean, all of these things come back to national self-interest, which is why it's so important that people start to understand what motivates political action and international affairs, instead of believing the myths and lies about victimization and this poor, tiny nation surrounded by hostile enemies. Let's talk about this poor, tiny nation that is backed by the world's only superpower, that has the fourth most powerful military on the globe, well more capable than any NATO power outside of the United States itself. Let's talk about its role in the region. Let's ask why Iran is being told it can't have nuclear weapons when Israel has between 200 and 300 nuclear warheads.
Jennifer, we have to take another break.
Why are questions being asked?
Let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm on with Jennifer Lowenstein. Jennifer, I just want to say to you, this has been a wonderful hour's discussion, and I hope you'll come back so we can do it again, because this story has gone on for six decades. It's not about to end.
No, and it needs to be. It really badly needs to be exposed for what it is. I wanted to just make one very quick comment because of the accusations I've had hurled against me over the past decade, that I support terror and I support Islamic radicalism, all of this nonsense. First of all, I don't happen to think Hamas is a particularly appealing organization. Don't like its ideology. I certainly, as a woman, do not appreciate its attitudes towards women. But as I tried to say earlier, Hamas is not the issue here. The issue is any people whatsoever who would fight against domination by a foreign power.
Oh, without question. Absolutely without question. And I agree. I wouldn't want to live under any type theocracy. I believe in a firm separation of church and state.
Right.
At the same time, Hamas offers wonderful social services, as they're able to provide them, to needy Palestinians.
And yet, it's because of the fact that Hamas has a social arm that is embedded in Gazan society that the Israelis have justified the attacks on schools and hospitals and clinics and family homes because they are quote-unquote Hamas centers or God only knows what they're using. The extent of the crimes that were committed in the last 3 weeks against innocent civilians has only begun to be known here in the West. I'm afraid if the truth ever really gets out, there would actually be popular protest at the same kind of level that you've found it in Indonesia and Malaysia and across the Middle East and other parts of the world.
Well,
but we've kept from that information. We're not allowed to have it.
And we may be in a quote-unquote ceasefire period, but there's a top featured article on globalresearch.ca that's titled Israel's Next War, Today the Gaza Strip, Tomorrow Lebanon. And I wrote a very little bit about this in my most recent article. To me, there almost is no question that Israel either has fully planned or is still putting together its plan for the third Lebanon War. The 2006 one was the second one. 1982 was the first. There's no question in my mind that there will be another war against Lebanon, because in the words of top Israeli generals, they just botched the first time. They fought the wrong enemy. They fought Hezbollah instead of the whole country.
Well, actually, I think, personally, I think that the Israelis are going to go after other targets first, because they know that they cannot defeat Hezbollah.
Oh, they want to destroy the country,
General. Right. None of us can predict the future, but I have no doubt that plans have long been made in Israel, for contingency plans for attacking Syria, for attacking Egypt, for attacking Jordan. Look, it's only a matter of time unless we have real leadership from this country, and I'm afraid that I don't see it. Not yet.
No, we don't have it. And Obama very definitely will do whatever he can to help Israel. And, oh, my goodness, I've written an awful lot about that. But that music says we're out of time, Jennifer. I do hope you'll come back.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, Jennifer.
And for the work that you're doing.
Oh, it was wonderful having you. And we will continue this discussion.
Yes,
we'll be back next week. We'll have an archive repeat tomorrow, and we'll be back live on Monday. No, we have a live program tomorrow. Tune in tomorrow. We do have a live program tomorrow. And I'll be back on Monday.
Thanks again.